This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Dave Brown, and this is a podcast version of AMI's Morning Show, now with Dave Brown. Catch the live broadcasts weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern on AMI Audio and AMI TV. Welcome back. It's the Now News Panel on AMI. I'm Dave Brown, joined by Michelle McQuigg and Megan Gilmore. Let's dig into our last topic. Ahead of the forthcoming federal budget on April the 19th, gig economy workers and analysts are suggesting that the federal government should look at reforming the employment insurance system to take into account shifts in the workplace landscape. There are a number of factors to consider, including how premiums would be calculated and when somebody would be qualifying for aid. In 2016, Stats Canada identified that 1.7 million workers were involved in the gig economy. That was an increase of 70% over 10 years, and analysts project that number has further increased in the 5 years since Stats Canada collected that data. So guys, I've got some conflicts about this, but even before I jump into some of the conflict, considering the raw numbers and the drastic increase between 2006 and 2016, this does seem long overdue. And Megan, as I think about this more broadly, should all government support programs at all levels be due for a review and refresh regularly, maybe once every 10 years or so?
Yes, I think they should be due for a refresh regularly. Again, see all our conversations in the last year about social assistance.
Yeah, training. For sure. It's a great example.
See all of that. There comes questions about how often should you have a review? Reviews take a long time, so you have to allocate your human resources. And how do you make sure that you are spending adequate time actually administering the program and adequate time reviewing the program? So there are some logistical things that need to be worked out about how to make them effective. But yes, please review your financial aid programs and think about how long we've had employment insurance and how much has changed in the world since that time. It's mind-blowing.
Yeah. And they do make some changes along the way. And occasionally there's industry adjustments. For example, seasonal workers like fishermen, for example, have sort of their own nook of EI that's been created. So there are some amendments that are made along the way. And of course, the other thing you have to factor in is whether or not you're set in absolute time periods of 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. You might not always be happy with the conclusion that whoever controls the purse strings in that moment may come down to. But Michelle, what do you think about the idea of a regular review of support programs at all levels on a regular basis?
That's what you're hitting on my biggest concern with it, and that would be the specter of partisan dismantling of something every year. If you have that kind of window of, let's say, every 10 years, it's going to be constant political seesaw, would be my fear, is that. So we need to have a lot of strict parameters in place, not just to manage the human resources and the financial resources, because that gets expensive, like Megan flagged earlier, but also just sort of to shield some of these reviews from political interference and make them as objective as they possibly could be. And I don't know how one goes about doing that, but I see it more all the time now when a new government takes over and their first, X number of days in power is all devoted to undoing the work done by the previous government. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that's for good, sometimes that's for ill. But for the kinds of programs we're talking about, they can't withstand constant partisan dismantling or interference, especially if it's going to happen on a major level. So I love the idea of a review in theory, but I foresee a lot of practical obstacles in a system like ours.
The real world always getting in the way of my great
ideas.
Right?
I know, I'm such a drag, I'm sorry.
It's okay, Michelle, it's okay. So I want to talk about my conflict here a little bit, because is this perhaps a little bit of an overstretch to be rethinking EI for the gig economy? Should gig economy jobs be exempt from such a program? A few people that were interviewed for some of the stories that I saw going into this were from performing arts backgrounds. So does it make sense to have an EI program for out-of-work actors? Should there be more industry-specific programs? Megan, what do you make of that conflict while still acknowledging that being out of work is still being out of work? And if you have worked for a while, in theory, you could have paid into the system. So what do you start thinking about maybe that back and forth that might exist about we acknowledge the need, but maybe there are certain industries that should have industry-specific supports?
Sure. I am not an expert on EI. I'm not an expert counselor, so I don't know how much I can help you unravel your internal conflict, Dave. But thanks for letting me try. I am just on a gut reaction. I'm very sympathetic towards industry specific programs and policies. I have a number of years ago, I was doing some reporting more on issues around labor when Ontario back in 2017 was under the Wynne government. We were revamping our Employment Standards Act. And I was doing a lot of writing about people who work in the factual TV industry. So that's people who make like documentaries and reality TV shows, and how a whole large portion of these workers just don't fall under any category, and there really isn't any safety net for them. And I'm very sympathetic mm-hmm. towards having an industry specific measures in some points. I've spent some time in the last while talking to different people about their experiences living on various disability benefits, whether that be CPP benefits or whatever system is available in their province or territory of residence. And there are people who will say, you know, like living from contract to contract was just as stressful or more stressful than living on a social assistance check. Mm-hmm. It was very comparable in how people were feeling with their financial security.
Yeah, Michelle, I cited performing arts individuals as one component of people who've been interviewed. Of course, we oftentimes think about maybe a gig economy worker, someone who drives an Uber or does some delivery services for Amazon, Uber, other companies, et cetera, mm-hmm. like this. And again, it becomes complicated to talk about what EI would look like for them, because oftentimes with someone like an Uber driver, you decide when you don't want to work anymore. It's not the company who tells you you can't work. You've made that choice. So should we be looking, instead of necessarily reforming this under the EI umbrella, trying to be thinking about more industry-specific programs?
Possibly, but I also see some merit in making some wholesale changes to EI and making the broad outlines of the program reflect the present reality a little bit more before we start adapting to specific industries. I feel like there's some really basic building blocks that need to be established first, perhaps some mechanisms built into the system that might enable better, more nuanced conversations with some of the industries that stand to be affected most. Because that, you know, speaking to your earlier question, had there been a review process, the fact that we were now 8 decades, is it, out of date?
8 decades, yep.
Might have come to light a little sooner. So I don't even know if we're in a position to have those kinds of industry specific conversations if we don't have a common song sheet to sing from.
Mm.
So I think that there might be merit in trying to enact some more fundamental changes first.
Guys, we are out of time, but I'm going to read this last question that I had posed just as a matter of a rhetorical question that nobody needs to answer, but we can all take away and think about over the course of the weekend. And maybe the audience, if they want to send in emails or they want to call in over the weekend, can do so as well. So I'm just going to read the question and then we're going to say goodbye to everybody. So, is this reform a band-aid that fails to address the actual issue running rampant in the economy? That issue being that businesses are too reliant on permanent part-time employees or independent contractors. Should more scrutiny be placed on how employers are deploying their workforce as opposed to thinking about the way the government supports people when they no longer have that income? I know you're both chomping at the bit to answer that question, but we're out of time. So I'm going to give you guys the points of contact. Maybe you want to leave a voicemail over the weekend to answer that question. So if folks want to do that, they can send an email to feedback@ami.ca, feedback@ami.ca. They can also send us a tweet @AMIAudio, @AMIAudio on Twitter, or they can pick up the phone and give us that phone call, 1-866-509-4545, 1-866-509-4545. Michelle, thank you so much for taking some time for us today. Have a nice weekend at work.
Thank you for the classic Dave Brown throwdown, and we'll talk to you soon.
The Dave Brown throwdown, yes. Megan, you enjoy your weekend as well.
I will be dialing the feedback number as we speak.
Excellent. Michelle McQuigg is the weekend news editor at the Canadian Press. Megan Gilmore is a freelance journalist and AMI accessibility reporter. They're our news panel, and I'll give you those points of contact one more time. You can send us an email, feedback@ami.ca, feedback@ami.ca. You can also leave us a voicemail, 1-866-509-4545. That's 1-866-509-4545. And you find us on social media, @AMIAudio on Twitter, or Accessible Media Inc. on Facebook. Coming up after the break, We have the regional news update with Mike Ross, and Jeff Ryman will stop by for a sports chat. This is Now with Dave Brown on AMI. You've been listening to Now with Dave Brown. Hit the subscribe button on any podcast platform and leave us a rating and a review.